Demons. I'm gonna depart from something here and move into another arena for a while.
Depart from the text. What day is today?
13.
3:13.
Monday the
13th.
I was in the kitchen.
We studied the stages of the encounter, and the presence, the pretense, the breakpoint, the voice, and we're at the clash. And I want to depart now from that to go back into some background information on demons in general. Okay? So remind me to come back, because it's important that we talk about the expulsion. Yeah. You don't want to clash without the expulsion.
You can just about bet I'm going to remind you.
Doug and I had a meeting last night. Okay.
In fact, hey!
What?
No. In fact, let's go ahead and make sure that's coming.
The thing that I began to think about after the last time we studied is that we really, as a body or as a stealth group, we don't know very much about this in light of this. In other words, what was the ambient thought in the Middle East, in the Near East, at the time of Christ and before? And what happened in the other religious groups and that kind of thing. So that's what we want to look at tonight. In all of these, Canaanite, Babylonian, even Egyptian religions, in all of the religions of this area, a demon was an evil spirit or a devil. And in these polytheistic religions, the line or the difference between demons and gods is a shifting one. Sometimes there are gods that do evil, and sometimes there are demons that do good. So it's like a shifting kind of a line throughout, even in their own religions. It was never clearly defined, even in back to Samaria, which really is the origin point of much of the aspect of religion, I mean of demonology. In monotheistic religions, which Judaism was the only one, it's a wholly different concept, and this it has to be centered in our minds, and that is that the evil spirits were always accepted as the servants of the one God. The idea that when Satan was elevated and demons were elevated along with him as the opposer or the opponent of God, and they were in some kind of a life-death struggle for good and evil, which happened primarily because of the Persian influence, then what we know as monotheistic religion really became polytheistic, and we've talked about that before. In ancient Israel, you know, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. I create darkness, I make peace, I create evil, I, the Lord, do all these things that you may know that there is none beside me. Now, I want to keep pressing on this because in our minds, our idolatry in American Christian culture, our idolatry and our way of life is absolutely no different from the polytheistic religions of the Middle East and the Near East, because we have many gods and many enemies of God. And so it's hard for us in this culture to see there is but one God. It's hard for you to see it in your individual lives because you confront issues that you think are enemies. But you got to see this, that from Israel's standpoint, it, by definition, Israel could have no enemy. You understand that? By definition, you can have no enemy.
Yeah.
anything that you perceive as an enemy in the determinate will of God is simply God himself chastising you. I mean, this is a biggie, because this is like trying to understand the ocean while you're swimming in it, because our thought process from our very earliest days have been different than that.
There's a question that's been forming in my head for about a week, and now it's even more of a question. The question is, what are we doing talking about exorcism? What's the concept of casting out a demon? I mean, what is the exorcist doing? And now that you say this, it's even more, what are we doing? Are we casting out the servant of God? I mean, why would we take action to change the situation?
Well, that's what we'll get into, this idea of stages of possession. We're casting out, and we're studying this only, and in one sense we're calling in the demons so that you will be tested. That's the only reason. That's the only reason the demons exist. And it doesn't have anything to do with the person that it's in who the demon is resident. It has to do with testing you. It has to do with testing your faith.
We're calling forth the demon
to test your faith.
We could go on and let the demon stay in the person, unless the demon decided to actually, you know, attack us with a knife or something, do something weird, it wouldn't be any big deal.
Understand?
So it's God.
Yeah, I do. But the follow up that's there is, how is that different than any situation?
None. It isn't, except this is more intense than you've ever can imagine. It makes your faith, or lack of it, crystal clear.
Well, I think what he's saying is,
desiring a situation.
The reason it's like, you can't, just because God's doing something doesn't mean that you can take that and say that this is a valuable situation as it is or something. It just means God's doing it.
Now you got it. No, hear me. Remember when we've talked about, from God's standpoint, the only purpose of time and space is to be tested. Is to have antagonism. Now, you're only tested, a test only makes sense when it's a test of a power that you know you have. Otherwise, I mean, you know, the stupid deal. I'm not tested to give up being quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I'm only tested along the lines that I have, and I know I have, the resident capacity. It makes no sense for Jack to say, "Praise God, I've given up everything for Jesus." Well, he gave up everything for himself. It doesn't make any sense. The test is along the lines of the thing that you possess. Now, in order for this test to become manifest, you have to know that you have the power to expel. Otherwise, you'd go along the rest of your life just being happy and content and living, settled down.
That's sort of what I was thinking.
Well, no. I mean, that's my, you know, that's why you got a bad rabbi. Because I keep wanting to turn up the heat. There's a billion places since we started this process where we could have settled in and said, okay, we're going to rest in this position and we're going to wait for the end of time. But that's not my style. What?
I think that what he was asking was, can you say, because God is doing this demon stuff, that God likes people to be inhabited by demons, and we should probably
not
leave it
well,
there,
really,
because that's
no, really
God's in
I'm
it
saying.
Or something. That's
really what I'm saying. What I was really saying is, why would you take action to change a situation?
Yeah, well, that's because we're studying it.
See, in one sense, all we're doing is we're moving beyond polytheism.
So we're going to study changing lead into gold.
Well, if we do, we will. We're going to study opening the seven seals of the ark, too, when the appropriate time comes. We have a mission. I got one of my sunglasses and a hat. We are on a mission from God. And our mission from God is to open those seven seals.
Okay, but I mean, I just got off track and tricked. That really isn't the original question. The question that's been forming in me is, what is the concept of what we're doing? Are we winning land? Are we driving back the... I mean, what is the exorcist doing?
Being tested. Has nothing to do with the person that's possessed.
He's not accomplishing
jack shit. The person that the demon is cast out of may go to hell anyway.
Who cares?
Well, you care because hopefully you do what I said last night. You see Jesus Christ in him.
It's like they act as a whetstone to the knife or something. That's their only reason for existence. Well, to come in conflict with the knife.
You got it? That's the purpose of everything. We're about. Again, if you don't like it, you can change your letter. That's what we're about. We're gonna, as long as I'm alive, we're gonna move as rapidly as possible to open the seven seals of that ark. All right? We'll study that later. Okay. Is any monotheistic religion as a system, and as any monotheistic concept in you denigrates until you have... Denigration takes place when you have not one God, you have two. Two is an impossible state in the spirit. And then we'll get into... Someday we'll get into numerology, but two is impossible. If two exists, then you, by definition, have to extend almost at the speed of light to polytheism in its truest form. If you believe that you have more than one God or have an enemy, if you have a purpose or an enemy, either one, because they're both the same sides of the same coin, or different sides of the same coin, then by definition you will denigrate. You will immediately go into polytheism and you'll end up with 1,000 gods. And the reason that takes place is so that your own worst fears will come upon you.
You even think yourself as an enemy.
Oh yeah, the same thing. If your eye is single, your whole body is full of light. But if your eye is double, even the light that is within you is darkness. And how great is that darkness? And the darkness provides that any time you see even any reflected light, any little ray of reflected light, you will call it a god, and you will begin to gather it and worship it. You'll move towards that end.
That's why all the stuff in like Revelation, where things are set in a it's like a context of warfare and opposition and, you know, a seemingly, you have to take it in the scripture is only good interpreted as the whole.
Right.
Otherwise you'll lock into that terminology, but there's an overriding bigger terminology that includes it, which is God is one.
Right.
And wait a minute, the flip side of an enemy is a purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, a goal.
Goal, purpose, whatever you want to call it. Objective.
Oh, the thing gets in your way.
Because that becomes a God.
Right.
And automatically.
Then you sell yourself to that objective, just as you sell yourself to the enemy. You ascribe power to the enemy in the same way you sell yourself to the objective. So you automatically create, and the moment you do that with one smallest intimate little teeny detail, and you're instantly polytheistic. You got it? You really got it? All right. That's why, above all things, my brethren, flee idolatry. Flee.
All right, so no goal, no purpose, no objective. In the beginning of a thing like this, where your presence is felt, and I mean, I'm the one that's sitting where you're usually sitting. What state are you in? Are you... You are not in the state of my objective is to cast this demon out.
Well,
it's way, way back from that.
Remember,
way, way before that.
Remember what I told you before. from the time of Christ, certain common facts or situations have been, well, from before the time of Christ, from the time of the law, there is an invisible power, a spirit of evil that exists. The spirit, for some obscure reason, can take possession of a human being. We gave the reasons, all the stuff we talked about, that the evil spirit can and must be expelled when seen. That this exorcism can be done in the name of and by the authority of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, the other thing is, it can only come into your frame of reference to be tested, for you to be tested. Again, you got to imagine Jesus Christ. With a word, he could have cast out every demon that had ever existed. Yesterday, today, and forever. With a word. He only cast out the demons that confronted him, and it was a test of him, from God's standpoint. You understand? Mm-hmm. We have got to begin to look at life only from God's perspective. From God's perspective makes it sound like us as a body is egocentric. Everything in the universe exists for our purpose. It doesn't exist so we can free people from demons. The demons exist to test us. You got to get this in your mind, or you'll never, especially in this dimension, we'll never understand anything.
Yeah, otherwise God could have just destroyed them all forever.
Oh, yeah.
When he
yeah, boom, boom.
Your state is...
Just a minute.
Why leave them around anyway? It seemed like an oversight.
For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God, for it is written, He taketh the wise in their own craftiness, and again, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Therefore let no man glory in men in any way, for all things are yours. Whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or things present or things to come, all are yours. And you are Christ's, and Christ is God's. That's the only order. We don't give a...
How do you ever know that Satan doesn't have any power at all anymore, or really, or in you? You know, how do you ever really know that until you confront
it? Until you confront it. Then you could... That's why perfected love, and the word perfect, it says perfect love, but it's teleos. It's the verb form of teleos. Perfected love casts out all fear. It can't be perfected or perfect until it's tested. It says tested love casts out all fear. It's tested in the abiding, in the enduring. When you have a crazy rabbi that pushes you to the limit.
So you're walking, and this thing steps in front of you, right? It blocks your path and comes toward you, in fact. And your response is, get out of the way. It's not turn and run. It's not step to either side. It's not turn sideways and let it go by. It's be gone. Because that thing cannot block your walk.
Because it's the only reason is because it's in your path and in your way, which is his way.
And now it's in our consciousness
right.
See that.
But now, again, part of priest training is to see what's always existed. You need to see spirit. Okay, if you didn't see it, it's not going to be an enemy. It's just sort of messing around. It's like a little germ in your body. You know what the hell it's doing. Well, this is a germ in the spirit. This is the switch, so that you no longer, your perspective of life is no longer you. Now you see life from God's perspective. Your purpose in life is to be of value to God. Period.
Doesn't it say someplace where we're going to judge angels or something
yeah.
like that? This is kind of part of that
Amen.
Experience.
Amen.
As we tell them where to go or where they're, who they are and what they're
planning. Yeah, you're not destroying the demon. You're simply saying, hey, hi. You're in my way.
Yeah, you cast him back into the pit. He's just kind of gotten up from the pit for a visit.
One of the things is that in seeing spirit, I mean, you know, the fact is that all the, you know, the course of this world and everything by the prince of the power of the air is all given over.
You know, it's his anyway.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's what it is, seeing spirit, it's seeing what's actually always been going on.
Yeah. You got to know in this process, the in the spirit, we're climbing this mountain. And the closer you get to the top, you know, when you're down at the base of the mountain, nobody gives a shit. You just sit and wander around and do stuff. And you can call yourself Jesus or Bruce, it doesn't matter. But when you start nearing the precipice or the peak, then everything, the closer you get to the top of the mountain, the more everything in the universe is your enemy. When you're down here before the mountain, there's no enemies. My God, I'm just a nice guy running around doing stuff, and my little religion is harmless. As I move to the top of the mountain, and as I move closer and closer and closer to that top of the one mountain, then everything in the universe at the peak, everything in time and space is an enemy of that point. And you'll have 1,000 allies, 1,000,000,000 allies against that point.
And the test is to see that that enemy is really God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really all it's about. Because what you do, you know, whatever the appropriate thing is that comes from that, and then the test is over.
Okay? Now, in general, among these polytheistic religions in the Near East, the ancient Near East, the concept of a demon was of a being less powerful than a god and less endowed with individuality. Now, that's important. The great gods of all of these polytheistic religions were accorded feasts and public festivals, regular public worship, but the demons weren't. The demons were dealt with in magic rites in individual cases of human suffering. Now, human suffering is always the sphere of a demon. Okay? Now, every one of these ancient Near East religions, defense against evil spirits was one of their primary concerns. And this began with the Sumerians, and they predated Babylon. The Sumerians, in effect, defined much of the terminology and much of the practice of demonology connected with demons can all be traced back to the Sumerians. Now, we're not going to study tonight, but in these incantations, they list 4 and sometimes 7 different classes of demons, different hierarchies. In every one of these cases, demons were considered to be the messengers or angels of the Lord of the Underworld. So the Lord of the Underworld is always connected with death. So somehow, demons were always connected with those things that were attended to or led toward death. They are said to live in all of these ancient near, the common, there's a lot of common stuff. They are said to live in the desert. They live near graves. A few are said to be ghosts. And they were, ghosts are different than demons. Ghosts were spirits of the dead who in their life did something terribly, terribly wrong, or who were killed by violence and were not buried properly. And that's part of a common...
Buried properly?
Buried properly.
Buried property.
Again, in all these, common to all these ancient Near East religions, sickness was thought to be caused by possession. And in the various languages, some of the names of the demons were the diseases they brought. There was a headache demon, a fever demon, etc., 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 etc. Okay?
Is any of that true?
Is any of what true?
The relationship between demons and disease.
Well, sometimes demons are can cause the appearance of disease, yeah.
Jesus cast out, and it says that. He closes it.
Now, there's a, in Babylon, there's a, and in Canaan, there's a demon called Lamashtu, L-A-M-A-S-H-T-U. And this is, and it's a biggie. And she is a ugly hag. And her primary, and the reason she's so big is because it was so common. And she, her job is to kill children in the womb and newborn babies. And since infant mortality rates were so high, I mean, she had a big job. She's also the goddess of abortions. Lamashtu. So it runs Lamashtu. Sort of runs shivers up your spine. It should run shivers
up. They put little things on the walls to drive her away or something.
Right.
When you had a baby, put it above the baby bed.
Another one that's common to all of Mesopotamia and Canaan is in Mesopotamia she is Lilitu, L-I-L-I-T-U. She's a succubus. Do you know what that is?
It's a female that appears at night.
I've experienced that.
Has sex with.
A succubus is a demon who assumes a female form to have sexual intercourse with men in their sleep.
I know.
That's the demon of wet dreams.
She comes to this house a lot.
That's probably what it amounted to, wasn't it?
No.
Explain wet dreams or something.
No.
Your seed
populated
the universe with more demons.
Oh,
see, that's what I've got. Are these real or are they just things that they invented?
Well, we'll find out what the Bible says in a second.
Come to the ranch next weekend.
An incubus. I-N-C-U-B-U-S is the male counterpart. In other words, it's a demon who assumes a male form to have sexual intercourse. But he's got more gears than a Mack truck, so it can be with a male or female.
Ooh, we don't want anywhere in this house.
Judy's got the pursed lips again.
Yeah.
Well,
you don't approve of these, Judy?
Now let's go to Isaiah 34.
And then there's the Holocaust.
It comes around Easter.
Mummies have sex with buses.
That's great big long pink ears.
I didn't hear what he said.
The hop-a-bus.
Succubus, incubus, and hop-a-bus.
This is good stuff. You can write that down for like a seminar. You know,
it's one of your best.
Break up the...
It's one of your best.
Keep that on the
tape. Did you hear that one, Wendell?
Yeah.
I like to say hi to Wendell.
I want to read all of Isaiah 34. For some reasons, and we're going to look at some different things in here.
I was just thinking, if this was a room full of bus drivers, it would have been funny to say the cycle bus.
Yeah, that would have started the laughter already.
Yeah,
but it didn't.
You finished?
Sorry.
Oh, you're going.
He's not even.
Oh, you're going.
Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein. The world and all things that come forth of it. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. And the word armies here just means their strength. He hath utterly destroyed them. Past tense, notice. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountain shall be melted with their blood. And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll. Now, again, I believe, I hope you do too, that that takes place the moment the seven seals of the ark are opened, and they're opened by understanding them. But it has to be a body that understands them. It can't be one person. And all their host shall fall down as the leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Idumea and upon the people of my curse to judgment. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams, for the Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea. The unicorns The unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls. Their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. For this is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of recompense for the controversy of Zion. And the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. But the cormorant and the bittern shall possess it. The owl and the raven shall dwell in it. And he that stretcheth out upon it the line of confusion and the stones of emptiness. They shall call, and I told you before, we've talked about it many times, and we're going to get into it in more detail, not tonight, but the cormorant, the bittern, the owl, the raven, they're all ancient symbols for demons. They shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all the princes shall be nothing. And the thorn shall come up in her palaces, nettles and brambles, and the fortress thereof, and it shall be a desolation of dragons, and a court for owls. Now, you got to understand, he's speaking in the past tense. This is the way God sees all nations. The wild beast of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island, and the satyr shall cry to his fellow. The screech owl also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest. Now, the word screech owl is not a screech owl. It's the word Lilith or Lilitu.
So night
wants
to
appear.
Well,
it's closer. It's
now, Lilith, we'll get to in great detail. Lilith is a biggie. Well, yeah, let's wait. I don't want to get into that now. Now, in general terms, what I've just, the little bit that I've said right there are common to Canaan, to Babylon, to Samaria, to Syria. I mean, this is common stuff. In Phoenicia, and a Phoenician amulet from around 700 BC contains the following. Quote, incantations. O flying one, O goddess, O sasum, O god, O strangler of lambs, the house I enter you shall not enter, the court I tread you must not tread. And this was intended to protect women from Lamashtu during childbirth. The amulet contains depictions of the demons mentioned. It contains a picture of, or a depiction of Lamashtu, and it also contains a picture of a winged sphinx labeled Flying One Lilith, and also a picture of a wolf devouring a child. Now, the details of the text and the figures of that amulet, and also the incantation texts from Babylon and Samaria and Arabic, Jewish folklore, all closely parallel everything I've just said. It illustrates the well-nigh universal character of much of what is classed as demonology. And this is in line with what we've studied several years ago, that it's the almost universal symbol of the occult. It's goat or goats' heads, upside down crucifixes, pentagrams, upside down doves, or a dead dove. In general, all of the symbolism of the occult is symbolism connected with death. Well, it got turned, because the reason nobody is dumb enough to run around and worship death. But it got turned so that by the worship of these symbols, then they could ward off death or sickness. Go to John 10:10, somebody, and read it.
So their protection, trying to protect themselves from it, really is worship of it.
Right.
It's all the same.
It's all the same.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy.
Okay, that's the function of demons. To steal, to kill, and to destroy.
Where's that?
John 10:10. Now, Israel's religion, in its purest form, always is contrasted sharply with this polytheism. Again, much of polytheism has, as its religion, protection from demons, incantations. But the contrast between how all these religions dealt with demons and how Israel dealt with demons is massive. In the Old Testament, they were practically nil. And we'll see some of the words. Again, I can imagine what went on in translator, but we'll go through that. In the Old Testament, they were practically nil. Magic of any kind, and almost all of magic and sorcery, was protection against demons. But magic and sorcery of any kind was prohibited from the earliest of times. In Exodus 22:18, that which is part of when the law was read, you remember we've talked about that? That's part of it. It's, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Now the word witch there is better translated as sorceress. Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress or sorcerer to live. And Saul had put the practitioners of necromancy. Now, necromancy are somehow calling forth the dead. It included those with familiar spirits and wizards. But he cut them off. He put them out of the land in 1 Samuel. Let's go there. Everybody go there. 1 Samuel 28. It came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, or Achish, "Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do." And Achish said to David, "Therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever." And David said, well, and now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. And the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gibeah. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Then said Saul unto his servants, "Seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And his servant said to him, "Behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor." And Saul disguised himself. Now, does anybody know where Endor was?
No.
It's out of the land.
Like across the river?
Across the river, I think. I mean, don't quote me in that, but I believe from my memory. Look it up.
It's like a... some of Shakespeare's favorite characters, which is
Yeah. It's like the familiar spirit of Jay-Z Knight in the channeling. I mean, that's exaggerated.
It's wrong. Can you find it?
I have to see Shunem.
Okay, don't worry about it. And some, we need to check that out.
Endor.
Where?
It says right there.
Okay, well, it's not.
Under Philistine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was because the reason Saul had put away. The reason I said that is Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. And so, again, we don't know what that means in terms of what land he was talking about, a land under the control of the... But anyway, verse 8, "And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, Behold, thou knowest what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits, and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul sware to her by the Lord, saying, As the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, Whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, Bring me up Samuel. And the woman... And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, Why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. And the king said unto her, Be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. Now, she saw spirits ascending out of the pit, is what it... And he said unto her, What form... is he of? And she said, An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. Well, anyway, he did a bad no-no. We won't go into that anymore. You can read it at your own leisure. Let's look at some of the things. Huh? Well,
that's the question.
That's the question.
Whether she was surprised, something even weirder than...
Well, later on, next two verses, it sounds like it is.
Yeah,
it is. So Samuel's in the
pit. Well, again, we're talking about, remember, the Hebrew concept of death, of Hades, was the same as the Greeks. We don't know a lot about death. You got that? Everybody agree?
Yeah, buddy.
Well, I mean, let's go ahead and read a few more verses. And Samuel said to Saul, Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. Then said Samuel, Wherefore dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord is departed from thee, and is become thine enemy? And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. For the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand, and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyedst not the voice of the Lord, nor executed his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along on the earth, and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel, and there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. And the woman came unto Saul and said unto him, Behold, thine handmaiden hath obeyed thy voice, and I have put my life in my hand, and have hearkened unto thy words which thou speakest unto me. Now therefore, I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaiden. Let me set a morsel of bread before thee, and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants together with the woman compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice. So he arose from the earth and sat upon the bed. And the woman had a fat calf in the house, and she hasted and killed it, took flour and kneaded it, and did bake unleavened bread thereof. And she brought it before Saul and before his servants, and they did eat. And then they arose up and went away that night. Anyway, let's go to Leviticus 19. Verse 31. Regard them not that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards, to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. Now 20, verse 27. Chapter 20, verse 27. Or, sorry, verse 26. And you shall be holy unto me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have severed you from other people, that you should be mine. A man also, or a woman that hath a familiar spirit, or that is a wizard, shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones, their blood shall be upon them. And Deuteronomy 18. I want to quickly go through the law on this stuff. Deuteronomy 18, verse 9. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh a son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. Thou shalt be perfect with the Lord thy God. For these nations which thou shalt possess, hearken unto observers of times and unto diviners. But as for thee, the Lord thy God hath not allowed thee to do so. Okay, Isaiah 8:19. I start in verse 13. Sanctify the Lord of hosts himself. Let him be your only fear, and let him be your only dread, is what it says in the Hebrew. Then he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, and for a rock of offense to both houses of Israel, for a gin and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait upon the Lord that hideth his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. Behold, I and the children whom the Lord hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel, from the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth in Mount Zion. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep and that mutter, should not a people seek unto their God, for the living to the dead, the law unto the testimony? If they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. And it shall come to pass through it, hardly beset it, and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and their God and look upward. And they shall look unto the earth and behold trouble and darkness, dimness of anguish, and they shall be driven to darkness. And then that's the inexorable process. And then the next one is about unto us a child is born. Go to Isaiah 29. Woe to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. Add ye year to year, let them kill sacrifices. Yet I will distress Ariel, and there shall be heaviness and sorrow, and it shall be unto me as Ariel. And I will camp against thee round about, and I will lay siege against thee with a mount, and I will raise forts against thee. And thou shalt be brought down, and shall speak out of the ground. And thy speech shall be low out of the dust, and thy voice shall be as of one that hath a familiar spirit out of the ground, and thy speech shall whisper out of the dust. Moreover, the multitude of thy strangers shall be like small dust, and the multitude of the terrible ones shall be as chaff that passeth away. Yea, it shall be at an instant, suddenly, etc., etc. One more, Psalm 106. Verse 24. Yea, they despise the pleasant land. They believe not his words, but murmured in their tents, and hearkened not unto the voice of the Lord. Therefore he lifted up his hand against them to overthrow them in the wilderness, to overthrow their seed also among the nations, and to scatter them in the lands. They joined themselves also unto Baal Peor, and ate the sacrifices of the dead. Now, to eat the sacrifices of the dead doesn't mean they ate corpses. It means that they ate that which, well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. Remember what it just said there. Verse 14. Remember, it's just gone through all this stuff about how everything in the Old Testament is the type and the prophet, I mean a metaphor and a figure. Verse 14, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men, judge ye what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar or participants of the altar? What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and the table of devils. When you eat, and when you gain sustenance, and when you gain life from anything that's in the Gentile world, you're eating the sacrifices of the dead, but you're sacrificing to demons. Now, it's only been the grace of God that he hadn't wiped you out thus far. He's long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. But now, when we begin to see what in truth demons are, and the power and the ugliness and the ridiculousness of your idolatry, we'll come to recognize that any idolatry cannot be excused. For any idolatry, the slightest, is the worshiping of demons. Amen? All right. Now, almost all of these religions that we've just been looking into here, in Canaan and Mesopotamia, Babylon, Syria, etc., much of their, almost all of their religion and their magic was protective. And that's an important concept. Complicated incantations, rituals, were done, they were intended to keep demons away or to expel them. Israel's religion aimed at a totally different concept. It denied any traffic with demons whatsoever. And here's the reason these things take place.
Like the stuff was actually appealing to the demons to go away, or you were dealing with them.
You were having an alliance with them, either positive or negative.
Yeah, you were feeding them something.
Okay? Now, Israel saw that problems, suffering, calamities, illness, even death, were not from demons, but from God. The great scriptures that reveal that are Amos 3:6. Shall there be evil in a city, and the Lord hath not done it? Or Isaiah 45. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. And it's happening now. So you'll see not to consider this lightly, in the slightest way. Right.
Okay, so this ties back into the mocking.
Now go to Doug, go to 1 Samuel verse 16. Or chapter 16, I mean. God uses all things to accomplish his purpose. And he teaches us the strongest way of seeing is to see by contrast. In your wildest dreams, in your wildest imaginings, you cannot imagine, nor can you conceive of, the evil that an evil spirit is. No horror movie, no Freddy Krueger, no nothing has ever succeeded in defining the evil of an evil spirit. Now, read 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 14 and 15.
But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. And Saul's servants said unto him, Behold now, an evil spirit from God troubleth thee.
An evil spirit from God. You've claimed that you're monotheistic in your belief system, but your practices have denied it. And now it's time that God will produce an example. Am I communicating?
Not to me, because I'm stuck before you said that, a reaction to what Doug just read, which is, so now that sounds like it'd be real inappropriate for some exorcist to try and cast the spirit out of Saul.
Honey, if you run around and search for demons, it's inappropriate. You're missing the point.
I know I'm missing.
doing what's set before you.
The point of it is that all of your things I'm not going to explain it. Let it jowl in you for a while. God sent an evil spirit to mess with Saul. Okay? I'm thinking that. That's enough for tonight. Anybody have anything else? I think we ought to stop this study right here.
That's what we've done.
No, I don't think we should.
That's what we've done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thinking these things.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Wonderful study.
Take it, big guy. God.
Thank you. That was great.
I really enjoyed that song.
It was a fine talk.